Hundreds of major investors from Australia and the region will gather in Sydney today to discuss how they're managing climate change as a core financial risk. The investor group on climate change has more than $2 trillion combined under its management and has the goal of achieving a net zero emissions economy by 2050. US climatologist and geophysicist Professor Michael E. Mann will deliver the keynote address to the summit. Professor Mann, welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
What, in your view, makes climate change a core financial risk?
Well, I mean, climate change is literally the greatest threat that we face as a civilization. It's impacting every sector of human civilization. It's a challenge when it comes to food, water, health, national security, and of course our economy. And so it's a bad investment at this point, investing in fossil fuel companies, companies that ultimately will be required to leave their main asset behind, stranded, if we choose, as we need to act on climate. That's a bad investment. And so part of the issue is making sure that we move investments away from the fossil fuel industry towards renewable energy.
Now, I mean, that is virtually accepted wisdom now, though it's also clear that this still could be years away. Like the assessments for the involvement of fossil fuels in the world's energy mix are still surprisingly high when you really read them closely, you know, well in sort of into 10, 20 years' time. You refute that?
Well, no, there's something to be said for that. In fact, there was an article just the other day that if you look at current investments by fossil fuel companies in Australia right now, especially in northern Australia, those investments alone will blow past any possibility of leaving emissions below the levels that they need to be left at. So, what is true, though, historically, when you look at projections of sort of the you know the penetration of renewable energy into the energy market, historically they've always been underestimated. We've blown past those projections, and so there is a history of economists making very conservative projections of the penetration of renewable energy into the market, and we've seen renewable energy outperform those projections. There's every reason to believe that we can do that. We can continue to do that. It's simply a matter of our incentives.
So it's really almost advising people that there's money to be made if they open their eyes. That's really as much of a focus for you as warning about stranded assets.
But money to be made in renewable energy and money to be lost if we don't act on climate. The cost of inaction now in terms of the damages we are seeing play out, the disasters we're seeing play out here in Australia and around the world, those costs are far greater than the cost of taking action, of investing in renewables.
Which types of businesses do you believe are most exposed here in Australia?
Well, of course, the fossil fuel industry, because their main asset, of course, has to be left behind. It has to be stranded. We can't afford to continue to mine and burn these fossil fuels. But if you look at the insurance industry right now, paying out huge premiums, especially the reinsurance industry, the insurers of the insurance industry, in the form of these unprecedented weather disasters, they're paying out huge premiums. They're losing out. If you look at the world of the food industry, if you look at high tech, everything that requires sort of supply chains that are now impacted by climate change related interruptions, extreme weather interruptions, that's influencing all businesses now.
What about the people who might say, look, we also have to invest in our grid's ability to handle all of this? Because what's becoming increasingly clear in Australia, where we've got, I've just got the stats here from the Energy Department, we're going to have 3.39 million small-scale renewable installations in Australia. A lot of those are roof installations. And really, the grid's not ready for this. And it's causing a great deal of consternation in Australia, or certainly challenging thoughts about how we draw this all together in a way that's useful. Now, is this an area that you believe offers real possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a wonderful opportunity for the world of finance, right? We have the potential to create smart grid technology that allows us to balance different forms of energy in a way that deals with the intermittency problem. The wind isn't always blowing. spring, the sun isn't always shining. So a grid that's increasingly powered by renewable energy needs to be a smart grid. It needs to know how to balance these different forms of energy to provide continuous available energy. And that requires technology. It requires an educated workforce that can help develop and deploy that technology. It's a huge economic opportunity, right? And so when people say that jobs will be lost if we move away from fossil fuels, far fewer jobs will be lost because that's a fairly automated industry now, as will be gained if we develop renewable energy. We'll have more jobs, we'll have a cleaner economy, we'll have a healthier planet.
But from your experience, is there a straight swap between the people who are employed in the older industries and in the newer industry? That's a real issue socially, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that's why we need to have educational programs, job training programs. We need to make sure that we don't leave people behind. This transition needs to be a just transition. The people who work in the coal industry, I've met many of them. I live in the state of Pennsylvania, which was built on coal. And these are good, hardworking people who are really victims, really, when it comes to the hardships that are associated with that industry and the fact that it's now disappearing. And they and their children need to think about finding jobs elsewhere. We need to make sure that we provide those jobs. We provide education, we provide training programs, so we don't leave them behind.
Is that happening at all, or is it just a case of wanting it to happen?
It is happening. There are now. It's not happening as much as we'd like in the U.S. right now because we do have a president who denies that climate change is even real and hasn't really provided the support. And Republicans in Congress haven't provided the support that's necessary to create that educational infrastructure, those job training programs, because they're working on behalf of the coal industry rather than the renewable energy industry. We need to recognize that that's where the jobs are going to be and to actually support programs to help people move into those.
The renewable energy, their voice is not particularly unified yet, is it? Or loud. It doesn't seem to be nearly as effective.
Well, you know, there's something to be said for having decades of massive profits and political influence. The fossil fuel industry has developed a massive political influence in the United States, here in Australia. The lobbyists that they employ, the funds that they provide, the campaign funding they provide for politicians has allowed them a level of influence in our politics that's unparalleled in any other industry.
Except maybe tobacco.
Well, there's some interesting analogies there, and we did eventually realize we needed to get away from tobacco. We need to get away from fossil fuels. We need politicians who would be willing to act, and that's what Australians have to think about, voting for politicians who will act and do the right thing.
As a geophysicist, you've been highly critical of so-called geoengineering solutions to fix a warming world. Could you help us please understand what some of those geoengineering solutions are?
Yeah, and I would use solutions in square quotes here because the principle of unintended consequences truly reigns supreme. When we start talking about these massive engineering proposals, planetary scale engineering proposals that are unprecedented and uncontrolled, putting particles, massive reflective sulfate particles into the atmosphere to try to reflect back some of the sun, or putting mirrors in space, and there's serious proposals that people have offered to do things like that, or dumping iron into the ocean to fertilize the ocean and get it to take more of the carbon out of the atmosphere. At a superficial level, these proposals seem like maybe they could actually counteract some of the global warming, but when you look in detail at what might happen if we engage in these massive, unprecedented interventions with the Earth system, all sorts of unintended consequences. We could end up favoring red tide algae by dumping iron into the ocean, making worsening ocean problems. We could end up, if we shoot those particles into the stratosphere, that could worsen acid rain, it could worsen ozone depletion, it could cause a shift in rainfall patterns that would make the continents drier. And imagine Australia getting even drier than the current projections.
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, Professor Philip Boyd from the University of Tasmania recently co-chaired a working group for the UN that reviewed 27 potential marine geoengineering solutions, techniques. And in short, the group found a lot of potential. And I might say to you, well, what's the matter with investigating that?
There is no problem with investigating geoengineering. In fact, I very much endorse that because a lot of the scientific investigations that use, and let's make a distinction here between investigating it using models, theoretical models, and investigating it by actually implementing some of these potentially dangerous schemes. I think that is indeed very dangerous. But using climate models, using our physical understanding, our chemical understanding of these processes to model the potential impacts, that's essential because, in fact, if you look at the history of the work that's been done in that area, what the modeling has revealed are all of these potential unintended consequences, things that we might not have seen when we look at this problem at first blush, that when you start investigating it in detail, you end up finding you could shift rainfall patterns, you could make drought worse in the continents, you could do all sorts of things that would make us even worse off than if we had not investigated implemented these geoengineering schemes. Just perhaps suffice it to say that in our book, The Madhouse Effect, our chapter on geoengineering is entitled Geoengineering or What Could Possibly Go Wrong.
Okay. Got the message. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Professor Michael E. Mann, who's a US climatologist and geophysicist, here to deliver the keynote address to the Investor Group on Climate Change Biennial Summit. It's held in Sydney today and tomorrow.